Skull and Everett present This Week in Horror.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Everett.
And I'm Sickle, and we are Sickle and Everett. We're the Unhallowed Reviewers. We have been spotty the last few weeks. We apologize, but thanks for sticking through it with
us. It happens.
It does. It happens. You know, things go wrong down here, too. It is what it is.
So we're just going to kind of talk about a mishmash of random stuff today. We got something really special planned for our 33rd episode, so keep an eye out for that. And if you're listening, only two more to go. But let's just kind of start off with just the list. So there's a second Ad Astra trailer that came out a week or two ago, and I know that Sickle's pretty excited for Ad Astra, but I don't know where I sit on it. It kind of looks more operatic than horror to me.
Definitely. I don't think it's going to have a lot of, like, horror thriller, or even really thriller elements to it. But anything that's original sci-fi, to me, for some reason, just interests me a lot. Mm-hmm. I think that, like, science fiction, I think a lot of people would probably disagree with this, but I feel like science fiction is kind of one of the last, like, areas where originality can still really shine through. There's just a lot of repetition in dramas and, you know, romance and biopics and even horror. There's a lot of, like, repetition and, like, familiarity. And sci-fi is one of those things where it's like, but what if we did this? And it's, like, just limited by your imagination.
Yeah.
But, like, I like it more than fantasy because I think it takes more creativity to try to base your concept in some form of reality as opposed to fantasy where you can just make up literally everything from scratch. It's like, what if this happened to Earth? As opposed to, what if Earth was just this? You know, where fantasy, you can make up everything from scratch. Sci-fi, you still have to base it in something and then mold it from there. And I just feel like, for me, that I think takes a lot of originality and creativity to be able to
But
pull
not
that
all
off
sci-fi is like that. I mean, Star
no,
Wars,
it's not.
Right?
No, it's not. You're right. Yeah, and like sci-fi, or I'm sorry, Star Wars, actually, I think it really kind of almost bridges that gap. Yeah, it does. It, like, kind of bridges that gap between fantasy and sci-fi.
Yeah.
So you're right. There definitely are movies that are, like, classified as sci-fi that do not follow that model.
For sure.
But definitely movies like Ad Astra, even if you hate it, like 2001: A Space Odyssey.
I never really watched it. It seems like I've heard it's really long, and
it is very long. It's an arduous journey. Like, it's not the most enjoyable thing ever, but it is it's an original experience. And I don't know, movies like Sunshine have, like, a really, really simple concept, but, like, it has a lot of depth to it because of what they bring to the table. I love that movie.
I kind of get frustrated with a lot of, like, hard science fiction, I think is what people call it, because basically what happens is you have these scenarios where anybody can overly criticize a movie. Like, I almost feel like you probably shouldn't have watched Interstellar if you really wanted to see how based it was in science, you know? Like, if you, the only reason you saw a movie like Interstellar is just to see how much of it was accurate, because I don't know, I'm not a scientist, or, like, I'm no Neil deGrasse Tyson, but that type of stuff is still so unknown and so theoretical that anything can change at any given moment. So, like, when people tend to watch the stuff that you find interesting and grounded in, like, science, it's like, but what if, like, the science changes in 10 years and then it becomes fantasy? Like, is that how that works or something? I mean, I don't know. It doesn't really change like that, but if there do new definitions come out, things like Interstellar are a good example. Like, other things like Ad Astra are probably more grounded than anything like Interstellar, maybe, we'll see. But, if the science on how black holes works changes, or we fundamentally change how we understand some of that stuff, then that movie could become, like, you know, basically a soft sci-fi movie like Star Wars or something like that, you know? I guess not that bad, but, like, it could change what genre it is almost, you know?
Yeah. I think it's kind of like going into, like, a war movie based on in history, like, going to that and, like, I'm gonna, I'm, you know, I studied this in college, so I'm gonna see how accurate it is. It's like, it's still a theatrical.
Yeah.
It's a film.
Yeah.
It's still a movie you're going to. There's going to be some art applied to it. There's going to be some, you know, liberties taken so that you as an audience aren't falling asleep when actually nothing was happening for 4 days in the trenches.
Yeah.
Like, it's there's going to be liberties taken. And, like, I think the same thing with sci-fi. Like, it's like, well, okay, but, you know, there are a lot of different ways that we're approaching these, the theoretical side of these things. So we're going to say that it's this, even though that's probably not likely.
Yeah.
That's fine.
What
Who
about
cares?
Things like Hellboy? Like, where it is trying to really set itself in the real world, and, like, how does like, religion, in terms of, like, Hellboy or movies like that, fit into the sci-fi versus, like, software's hard sci-fi, even in horror type of discussion?
I feel like you've got... kind of my defining breaking point for those things, like, where I put the line between fantasy and sci-fi, because I feel like a lot of Hellboy is fantasy,
okay,
is if you don't get an explanation, it's fantasy. So, for example, like, and it's entirely an approach to me. So, like, if, like, let's just take the Blood Queen, for example. If you had an explanation for why she has her powers, like, based in physical reality, like, she got, you know, this ability because she had this blood disorder that caused this and that, and then, like, it made it to where she could, like, you know, do something specific. It's like, okay, well, that's more sci-fi to me, because you're trying to base it in some form of reality that we understand. Even though it's not possible, or possible as we understand it, you're basing it in reality. But if you just say, she's a witch, and she had these powers, it's like, oh, well, that's fantasy. You're not putting any explanation into it, you're just saying that this is part of the world. So then it goes, to me, it goes from it's somewhat of some kind of science base to magic.
What about...
Where you don't have to give it a base.
What about, like, Annihilation?
Annihilation I would consider sci-fi because it's... To me, it was... And I may be misunderstanding it, but for me, it was based on, like, you know, fractal science and, like, the theoretical quantum physics in parts of it. To me, I was seeing that film as, like, this alien being exists in a form of reality that we don't comprehend.
So is the zombie movie become a fantasy movie if they don't explain how the zombies were created?
That's a good question. I think there are some zombie movies that are fantasy and some that aren't. Like, I feel like the voodoo ones are kind of fantasy, and the ones, like, 28 Days Later are sci-fi.
Hmm. Interesting.
Even though everything else about those movies is almost exactly the same. It's like the origination of those things. It kind of differentiates it in my head for me.
So let's segue from sci-fi as a genre to a movie that came out recently that you watched, which was Men in Black International. And the original Men in Black, I think we both agree, was more edged towards like a horror film. And then the second and third ones were kind of more of like sci-fi comedy, I guess, or sci-fi comedy action. If that makes sense.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like that every single installment has tried to capture, including the new one, has tried to capture the magic of the original. And I feel like for me, the biggest struggle is that they thought, it seems like they're always just like trying to make new gags
yeah,
with the characters and the sci-fi stuff.
Gaggy, yeah.
Yeah. Instead of focusing on like what was actually good about the first one and what was so funny. Like, darkly hilarious about the first one was that, like, everything was so ridiculous, and all of the Men in Black people, particularly Kay, is so nonchalant about his response to it.
Yeah, because he's, like, used to it all, and you're like, yeah. And everyone else, even people watching it, and some of the agents and other things like that are like, what the heck's going on? This is crazy. Like, how is he so chum?
And then, like, the most insane part of it all is that we're watching a giant cockroach walking around in a human corpse. Killing people.
Yeah.
Like, that's the most... Like, just taking... Like, you don't think about it. I don't think you ever really think about it when you're watching the movie. But when you take it out, that's, like, the most horror thing ever.
Yeah. When you try to... If you explained it badly to somebody.
Yeah. Like, it's just... It's, like, the most horror thing ever. And, like, you think about it, like, that's most of the movie. You're watching this decomposing corpse kill people. That's insane.
The real question, though, is that Men in Black, is that more of a fantasy or a sci-fi movie? According to like what the definitions we just gave were. I mean, we obviously both agree that the first one was very horror-oriented in terms of its like sub-themes, but like the other ones were more just action comedies or whatever, right? But is Men in Black so far removed from having it, its roots explained that it's now a fantasy?
That's super interesting. I think that Men in Black, you could argue, falls into the same issue, or not issue, but, you know, conflict category, as yeah. Star Wars, where because it can simply say, because it has, it follows that thing that I was saying that separates fantasy from sci-fi, where if you just simply explain it away by saying, well, this is it, this exists, then it's fantasy.
But only Star if it Wars exists in such a way that you can explain it relative to our Earth, right?
Yes.
Because Star Wars could never be sci-fi in strict terms of your definition, or our concept of reality.
Our concept of reality, not just Earth, but like our concept of what reality is. So,
that opens it up like, a lot more.
Yeah, because like, but also, like, I mean, so then like you have to take the leap of like, okay, well, in Star Wars and in Men in Black, you have to take the leap of like, okay, well, there's aliens in, or it's like there's tons and tons of planets with tons of millions of different species of aliens. So you have to assume that like there's just ridiculous amounts of possibilities there.
Mm-hmm.
So that does kind of, it kind of sneaks into that gray area of fantasy, because you're just able to explain it away by saying, well, there's, you know, billions of planets. So an alien that exists like this, of course, you know, lives somewhere. Like so you can explain it away that way, which to me, I did describe as a fantasy element, but at the same time, it's still based in like, okay, but it would have to be carbon based or whatever, you know.
What about like Star Trek, like for you? Like Star Trek tries to put as many roots as it can inside of like some type of science stuff, you know, like, because that was created back in the 80s before we knew a lot of things that we now base a lot of scientific films on, right? And the like, I don't know, those kind of older sci-fi shows like Stargate, Star Trek, you know, Farscape, stuff like that. Like, what do you feel about those ones?
I feel like Star Trek is the most sci-fi thing ever, because they devote, like, 9 times out of 10, they devote, like, 75% of an episode explaining
but
what
sometimes they
it
just
is.
Don't explain stuff. Like, they never really explain. They explain Q, kind of, but they don't get too deep into it. Sometimes
if you want my personal opinion, I hate Q. I think I despise Q because he breaks the mold, and that upsets me greatly. Because to me, the best thing about Star Trek is that it almost feels like, to me, like they grab 3 post-it notes out of a bucket. They put them on a table, and they go, okay,
how do we connect these?
We've got a living rock that shoots lasers but communicates via binary.
And
or
a ship failure. Like, and then we also need to, like, have a story arc based around, you know, Picard's, like, vineyard. And you're like, okay, how do we make these things tie together?
But then, like, they're like, okay, well, now we have to explain this. So how can we, with our concept of physics and reality, explain how this could exist? And they do their best job, and to me, that's like the most sci-fi thing ever.
Okay, all right.
To,
like, so
come up with that.
Let's hop to another type of sci-fi movie that's horror, because we just heard recently that Andy Serkis might direct the second Venom movie, and Tom Hardy's in it for the next few. So potentially getting a second Venom. I think both of us are genuinely probably excited about that in terms of just seeing more Venom on the big screen. I guess, does that describe your feelings towards the situation?
Yeah, I wonder how you feel about this sentiment. Like, I feel like I've reached the point where I'm desensitized to disappointment. Where, like, I'm so excited for a character to be done flawlessly to the way that I picture them in my head, and then just being let down when I get to the theater. And I feel like with the first Venom, I was like, you know what? I'm just excited for this to just enjoy Venom in a live-action movie.
That, like, you just described my entire way of in viewing entertainment. Like, if I'm going to actively spend my time and effort and money to go to something, I'm going to try to get as much entertainment and happiness out of it as I can. Because there's no reason to, like, I don't know, like, there's some movies that I genuinely dislike, and sometimes you can't make everything work for you, and some experiences that you definitely can't, like, just say you didn't enjoy. But the way you just described watching Venom is the way that I try to watch every movie.
Yeah, and I think that's a great approach to watching movies.
It means I'm a terrible critic, by the way, but it means that I really do try to find the best in as much as I can in most things.
Hashtag
self-promotion.
Even if you want to call yourself like a bad critic because of it, you still get to enjoy movies the right way. Like, I feel so bad for movie critics that are just, they're so ingrained to just like, I have to find every little issue with this movie. Mm-hmm. And I do that sometimes and I hate it. Like, there will be times where I'm going to a movie and I'm like, I'll catch something when I'm watching it. And I'm like, dang it. Now that's all I can think about is that this movie failed in this way and this way. And I can't just sit here and enjoy the rest of it. And like,
it happens though. Sometimes like something will happen at the beginning of a film and I kind of criticize the film for the rest of it because of it. But what do you feel about Andy Serkis directed Venom 2? Like, we both know that he's not really directed a lot of movies, so.
No, he hasn't. The only movie that I saw that he had currently directed was like a biopic romance back in 2017, and which doesn't really fit. I think we agreed that it doesn't really fit the characters that he plays. Mm-mm. Like, he plays CG, you know, for people that don't know who Andy Serkis is, because he's always behind the scenes in CG stuff. Or covered in makeup.
Andy Serkis actually plays one of the main villains from like the Marvel franchise. The guy who gets killed in Black Panther.
What is his name?
I don't remember.
Sebastian Shaw. It's like Claw or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's. I mean that movie or those series of movies when he has that role are like some of the only movies where you actually see Andy Serkis without anything on.
Yeah, right.
Like any makeup on.
So I don't know. I'm willing to give him a shot. I mean, it's not
absolutely.
It's not like he's gonna just deliberately try to do it badly. I mean, he's probably gonna have a lot of like input from Sony as well.
Yeah, you've got Venom and you've got Tom Hardy. So just go have some fun with it. Mm-hmm. Take chances. Who cares?
So, keeping on the superhero train, there was an announcement for the Phase 4 and 5. Phase 4, is that the current phase of Marvel movies? Like the ones that start with Spider-Man, is that Phase 4?
I'm so lost with the phases.
Okay, doesn't matter.
They said that technically this last Spider-Man movie was the end of the phase and Endgame wasn't, which I just laughed at.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that was the most disingenuous thing that they've ever said, just to try to get people to go to the Spider-Man movie. I was like, I had so much respect for you guys when you said you wanted to put Endgame back in the theaters just to beat Titanic. Like, you just straight up said that's why you were doing it. And you were like, we didn't add much. All we did was add this one cutscene. That's all you're gonna see.
They did that? They really actually already did that?
Yes. Yeah, they did this. And they came out and said that's why they were doing it. They're like, we just want to beat Titanic. And I'm like, this is so awesome. Avatar. James Cameron movies just all blend together in my head. But like, they just wanted to go back and beat Avatar. And it's like,
Oh, nice.
I so much respect that they just came out and told the truth about why they were doing it. Mm-hmm. But then they come out and they're like, well, technically, the Spider-Man's the end of this. Like, no, it's not.
Well, I liked Spider-Man. I thought it was pretty cool.
No, it was, but I just thought that was a cheap
play. No, yeah, I agree. I just was segueing into Spider-Man for a second before we talked about the Phase 5 stuff, because we even talked about it, but we've all seen it. It was pretty sweet. A lot of subversion. Mysterio was done pretty well. I think that the end of Spider-Man Far From Home was pretty cool. It sets up a decent, like, either, you know, decent stuff for his story in the future. So I'm kind of excited.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like, in general, a lot of these movies, if it was a superhero or a supervillain that I hated in the comics, they did an amazing job with them in the movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, Mysterio sucks in the comics.
No, I disagree. Like, he's some of the coolest story arcs that I've read in, like, some of the ones. In the original Spider-Man, he's kind of boring, but I never really read that far back. But newer Mysterio
stuff
is
mainly what
cool.
I'm referring to. Okay. It's his early stuff, and then also his costume design is ridiculously dated. But they did a good job with it.
He has a Daredevil story arc where he convinces Daredevil the Antichrist is being born. And it's really funny. Like, it's really crazy, too.
Dude, all that stuff is crazy. Like, I mean, it's not that you can't do stuff with Mysterio, it's just there's...
But they do Mysterio well in Far From Home, I think. They had some of the coolest Mysterio scenes that have ever been made in that movie. But we're not here to talk about Far From Home. You should go see it, though. I want to talk about Doctor Strange... in the Multiverse of Madness. So, supposedly, I heard from Sickle this morning that it's supposed to be slated as the first MCU horror movie, which is a pretty sweet way to take Doctor Strange's character. But I don't know... Yeah, I'll leave it right there for now. I'll let you get your comments.
I'm like really excited if that's the case. Although the one other instance where we've heard this before was New Mutants, and that has been a debacle.
Hasn't come out yet, right?
Technically. Yes, but okay. the reason I would call it a debacle is just based on all of the coverage that it's gotten up to this point. It's been delayed like over a year.
So was the first Arkham Asylum game, but that game was actually crazy good. So, like, it's Switch Studio. Not to say that it's like the same thing, but I mean, like, there's other instances where something has been like delayed and switched production companies and blah blah blah, and still there's still something good. So, like, I try not to hold it against something too much when that happens, because it's just the nature.
I still want to see it.
Oh, yeah,
and I think
too.
The MCU horror movie, or I think the MCU is set up better for success to do something like this, but I also don't really believe them. I doubt it will be actually as much horror as they say it will be.
That's what I was going to say, is like, Doctor Strange is pretty omnipotent, so like, when you're saying it's a horror movie, it really isn't about Strange being the main character of a horror movie. It's about the horror happening to the people around them, you know, like, so you have, like, Strange and all of his, like, repertoire of characters, but, like, all of them are, like, getting tortured by Dormammu, or, you know, getting, like, dreamed upon by Nightmare and stuff like that. Or you have Shumagoroth, who's, like, the Lovecraftian kind of take on it, and multiverse and things like that. So that could be really cool in terms of, you know, the horror aspect of where you make Doctor Strange, because you never really know where they could take it, but it's not going to be centered around Strange being, like, the, like, person who's getting, like, hunted down and murdered, unless he loses his power, which would be kind of lame. So, I think they probably just mean it's going to be, like, horror in its, like, aesthetics, and it's maybe, like, how it's treating some of the characters, but it can't really truly be a horror movie.
Yeah. It's hard to picture it that way, just with Strange as a character.
Mm-hmm.
He just doesn't ever really, his personality doesn't really ever head in that direction to me.
And like, horrifying things happen around Strange, but not like
all the time.
Not,
yeah.
But he's not ever a character that would really be good in a horror movie, because he's never really scared of anything. Like,
exactly, yeah, so. I agree with that. Although there was that one arc that we were talking about with Bacalo, where he was terrified because they were fighting this force. I don't know if you recall it at all, but they were fighting this force that like is essentially like
anti-magic force, yeah.
Yeah,
and like they can steal magic from stuff. The Empyreans, yeah.
Yes,
I mean, but that's like him being scared outside of a horror aesthetic and stuff.
Oh no, yeah, so it was kind of like they weren't very horror.
Whenever
yeah.
Strange is scared, it's never scary to us, and whenever Strange yeah. isn't scared, it could be horrifying to us. Like the jackals
yeah.
that live and cook tea for Strange in his house. So you're like, that sounds terrifying, but everyone else deals with it fine. So anyway, I think it has the potential to be really cool, and they were talking about Scarlet Witch being in it, which is sweet, because I love when they have crossover movies like that, and they might introduce the new Blade into it, because Blade's apparently coming in the next 2 years.
Yeah.
Which is pretty sweet.
That'd be exciting.
Yeah. I'm really excited, because Blade being part of the MCU officially is going to mean that they are able to dive more deeply into, like, the fantasy stuff part of the MCU. Or the Marvel Universe, instead of just the, like, strict, like, sci-fi science part, you know?
Yeah.
They did okay with Strange, and they did okay with, like, Thor, but a lot of that, it still comes back down to, like, manipulating multiverses and stuff like that. The only movie that does, I think, is Strange. It feels super magic-y, but it's not even that magic-y, in my opinion.
Yeah, they still kind of use some ambiguous mm-hmm. dialogue to kind of leave it up in the air.
Yeah. So let's switch gears and talk about some new stuff that's either just coming out or coming out soon. So The Boys just came out on Amazon Prime, and it's a show. Do you know about The Boys? Like, have you heard about it?
Oh, yes, okay. Very much so.
So one of our other Hell buddies, he sometimes accompanies us to Telluride, is a huge fan of the comic book of The Boys. It's by Garth Ennis. It's, like, very, very critical of superheroes, and it's, you know, a lot of parody in the darkest form, I guess.
which is Garth Ennis's repertoire. Like, that's just his.
Yeah. That's his wheelhouse. But The Boys TV show interested me a lot for some reason, and I think it was the same reason as when I typically read comics. Like, I don't typically read a lot of horror comics personally, just because the comics are superheroes for me, and I don't know why that is. But I'm really excited to see this brought into the screen, because there's a lot of stuff that happens in The Boys that's really gratuitous, And I never really like experiencing that stuff in comics. I prefer to experience it on TV. I think that makes it weirder. You know?
Yeah.
Don't agree.
Oh, I'm sorry. No,
I'm just kidding.
I'm really excited to watch it. I haven't gotten to watch any of the episodes yet. It just released yesterday. I think it's going to be really good. I think it's going to be a more, like, self-aware, a stronger satire of, like, the Watchmen universe.
Yeah, oh yeah, and that's what I think, too. If I had a choice, I'd probably read The Boys over reading The Watchmen again, because it just sounds more interesting to me, and I never really enjoyed The Watchmen all that much. But the first, so this isn't a spoiler, because it happens in the first 15 minutes of the show, but the main character, Huey, his girlfriend dies at the beginning, but in the most horrific way I've ever seen. Like, basically what ends up happening is one of the superheroes is, like, trying to get somewhere.
The Flash.
And, yeah, like, his name's A-Train, and he, like, basically runs through Huey's girlfriend and turns her into, like, a basically, like, blood soup. And you see it all. Like, you see Huey get splattered. You see, like, all the bones and the viscera, like, kind of in slow motion. Like
holding her hands.
Yeah, and it's really gross. It was really graphic. And so I'm kind of excited for the rest of it, because if that sets the scene for the rest of it, there's some pretty intense scenes that I've heard happen in The Boys, and it sounds like they're trying to be as true to that as they can. So be prepared if you're going to watch it, because it's supposed to be pretty messed up.
I'm excited.
So, Netflix has a new indie horror film on it called The Typewriter, or as I'm gonna call now, Hypewriter, because everybody and their mom is, like, tweeting about how scary this movie is and how they couldn't watch it and how it's, like, you can't even watch it during the day. It's so freaky. And I watched a trailer for it, and I definitely didn't get that vibe. It just seems like a kind of cheesy movie about a lady who gets possessed by starting to write on a typewriter. And I'm like, okay, I mean, it seems like an interesting premise. I'm a fan of the whole, like, object horror thing. I like Annabelle, and I like that whole universe, but I don't know. I kind of, when people do that to movies, I just, okay, it's like, my give-a-shit meter goes way down, you know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Yeah.
Unless I was already interested in the movie, and people say it was scary, like Midsommar, but usually then that tends to overhype it, you know, again, even more, but it doesn't make me hate the movie, generally.
I've just come to, like, kind of ignore that whole thing of, like, oh, this movie's the most messed up movie I've seen ever. Oh, this movie's the scariest movie I've seen in years. It's like, okay, but I've just come to, like, kind of ignore that part, and I try to not let it affect me, my approach to the movie, because I've come to realize that, like, number one, we're desensitized at this point.
Me and you specifically, or
yes, or yeah, the like world. We're desensitized. You know, well, horror fans are desensitized. And secondly, I feel the more I've watched horror, the more I've realized how subjective that experience is. Mm-hmm. And it's just not a universal... It's being afraid is not a universal experience that everybody experiences the same way. And so something that... Like, for example, years and years ago, and sometimes I'm embarrassed to admit this, but at the same time, I'm like kind of be... Like, it fits what I'm saying really well. Like, people were terrified of The Ring. And I wanted to fall asleep during The Ring. Hmm. And then The Grudge came out a couple years later, and a lot of people were like, yes, me too. Like, The Ring, for a lot of people were like, this is just, like, a way lamer version of The Ring. It, like, did nothing to the people that were scared by The Ring. It did nothing to them. But, like, it terrified me. I thought The Grudge was one of the scariest movies I'd seen up to that point in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I was pretty young, but, like, still. Like, it was, that movie did so much more to me, and I'm like, for whatever reason, that triggered me different. Like, other people were scared by that, like, weird film collage thing that happens in The Ring, and mm-hmm. like, really disturbed them. That, for me, was like, this is boring. This is dumb.
Yeah.
And then The Grudge, like, it was just that combination of visual and sound, and the way they did it really triggered my flight or my fright. Yeah.
Yeah.
It triggered my fight or flight, and I... Agreed. Like, it's just the way that you approach movies, and so I'm interested in seeing it, just for the heck of it, but definitely not.
But I think what I'm getting at is how, I mean, I don't want to be like, oh, we're critics, you should listen to us, blah, 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 but, you know, anytime you're on Twitter, take stuff with a grain of salt. I mean, you're only going to hear the people who scream loudest when you're looking at for reviews and opinions, and so, I mean, take the time to go things, because if you're one of the people that's easily disappointed, unlike me, like, you're going to save yourself a lot of time and energy to, like, just do a little due diligence when you're looking at stuff. Don't always just listen to Twitter. If someone says it's the scariest, then you want to be, you're easily disappointed, I guess. But what I want to end with is that the final trailer for It Chapter 2 came out, and this movie, man, it looks crazy.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Me too. I can't
I'm
wait.
So excited.
And I think that is probably where we'll end it, but if you haven't seen the It Chapter 2 trailer, go see that shit, because it is really cool. And yeah.
Yeah, I don't care what anybody else says. Like, I feel like the It remake was one of the best horror movies we've gotten in a long time. Mm-hmm. I thought it was so well done across the board. It was like superficially entertaining. It had depth in the characters. It wasn't like super campy, cheesy, hard to follow like most Stephen King stuff is. I just thought it was so well done. Yeah. So I'm really excited for this.
Yeah, so everybody get your hype hat on for It.
But, September!
Yeah. Thanks for listening. You know, we appreciate all your opinions, so let us know what you think about the stuff we talked about today.